Hello, welcome to the Twin Perspectives podcast series, run by travel bloggers Twins That Travel. That's us,
Claire
and Laura.
Tune in for regular discussions about our latest travels, interviews and life more generally.
Happy listening.
Bye.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 12 of the Twin Perspectives podcast series.
And this will be the final episode in Season 2.
Purely because in Season 1 there was also 12 episodes and we like to be consistent.
Consistent.
I got my braces in.
Yeah, so we've just decided just this minute that this will be the last episode of Season 2. And then we're going away next Thursday to Portugal. So you probably won't have a chance to record a podcast next week anyway.
No.
Which will give us a couple of weeks break and then we'll be back with Season 3 to talk about our trip to Portugal. And then we're going very shortly after that to Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, we're flying there with Etihad, which we're really excited about. And then I've never been really that way, to be honest.
No,
and
never.
It's 39 degrees at the moment.
Yeah.
So we're super hot.
And we're going during Ramadan. So I think it'll be really interesting. So yeah, we'll be back for Season 3 with some very interesting, I hope, destination podcasts.
Yeah.
But for today, unfortunately, you've been lumped with what we have titled the Random Question Podcast.
Yes, which really is. It does what it says on the tin.
Yes. So we put up an Instagram question yesterday to ask whether anyone had any ideas on subjects for a podcast, and instead we just got a whole load of very random questions back. So we thought we'd just put all of those into an episode, and that's a weird and wonderful way to end Season 2.
And I've not really had a look at the questions, but they seem to be kind of from the sublime to the ridiculous, don't they?
Yes, and we will answer all of them.
Yes.
So is there anything you want to add about anything more the last week or so before we begin?
No, because you've had no feedback on the last podcast. But it has been listened to.
What's weird is that these podcasts are listened to a lot, yet no one ever says anything about them.
To be fair, though, I listen to lots of podcasts and I don't feel the need to tell the person.
No. I did see a tweet the other day saying, if you read something good, listen to something good, watch something good, tell that person. And I was like, I don't think I even do that enough, so maybe I should do it more.
I think we do it sometimes, like with Fern Cottons, I'll always tweet about it, and you with Yoga Girls.
Yeah, I just love sharing things that I've listened to that are helpful to others. So maybe that means
it's
our podcasts aren't very helpful.
Or they listen to 5 minutes and it ends.
Yeah, you can actually see on iTunes how long they listen to them for.
What's the...
Ours are quite good, yeah.
Oh, good.
They hang in there till the very end.
Until they're asleep.
Yeah. So over the course of however long it takes, we've got 15 random questions to answer. Are you ready, Laura?
I am ready.
So begin with question one, which is, what are your key travel essential items?
Okay, so we had a discussion about this previously, and the difficult thing is I am a bit of an irrational packer.
Yes.
And kind of, therefore, I'm not the best packer in terms of packing concisely and rationally at all. So what we'll do is we'll really split this into how I realistically and genuinely pack, but also what would be helpful.
What would be helpful for rational people.
So let's start with the weirdness.
Okay.
And the weirdness surrounds my underwear.
Yes.
It's gotten worse, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
I will now pack treble the amount of underwear.
Triple, you mean?
Triple the amount of underwear that I need. And it's only really applies to knickers. That's it.
Socks? No.
I don't care about socks because I've got such bad circulation. My feet are always freezing cold, so I don't think that they perspire.
No.
So it's just knickers, so I always pack at least 3 pairs to wear in a day.
I do too. Especially if you're travelling on a day.
Yeah.
So travel knickers, when you want to change as soon as you've arrived.
Yes.
And then you'll probably want another pair for the evening.
I always want a new pair of evening knickers. Yeah. Not fancy, just clean.
These are, by the way, for anyone listening from the US, are pennies.
Panties.
Panties.
Panties. So that's weird. I also refuse to go anywhere without a full ultra-sized medical kit.
Yes, of everything you think of.
I've got a Valium in there.
Oh, I'm sure they've probably gone off.
Another prescription drugs. We've got everything that we could need, including Claire's go-to.
Compeed blister patches.
Compeed blister patches. the number of times I have been on a trip and my ankles are bleeding after being hacked.
Because you always wear new shoes.
New shoes, yeah.
Why?
Do you remember in Florida when I had those new shoes on?
I wanted to kill you.
Because I had no skin left.
Every destination we go to, you wear new shoes and then you can't walk.
No.
So now I always pack Compeed. I should be sponsored by Compeed heel or blister patches because they are my go-to.
Yeah.
Travel essential.
And then I always have the forehead balm as well.
Now, oh yeah, we
love
that.
Which really helps because it's so much better than paracetamol.
So forehead balm is it's like a menthol stick.
It's a menthol
stick that you can rub over your forehead, and it generally really does work. It gets rid of all of any pain.
I don't
understand how it works
because it opens up the blood vessels, so more blood comes in, and that helps ease tension and pain and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Fact.
So you've got knickers, Compeed blister patches and menthol stick for your head.
Yeah, and then I also obsess about my camera. So I always take at least three camera batteries, and not all have to be the good Canon ones. I might just get some extra ones on Amazon. And then I always have an extra SD card, so I don't, say I fill it up or it gets corrupted, I've got another one.
Yeah.
All the time. So I kind of obsess around my underwear, around my technology and whether I will fall ill.
Yes, that's probably, I'm trying to think back. That's probably from the irrational side of things. Yes, that's everything. Always have a photocopy of my passport.
Do you?
Yeah, always. It just sits in the pocket of my suitcase. Because if you lose your passport, then at least you've got proof of who you are. You can take it to the embassy.
I'll just use yours, same person.
Wouldn't work if we were together, would it?
Well, I'll just go to the toilet and come back.
But someone said that to me once and I thought, yes.
Yeah.
So I scanned it and put it in my suitcase. It's always there.
But then on the rational side of things, I think over the last 2 years, what Claire and I really want to do is basically take as little as possible.
Yeah.
And we used to pack so much. Yeah, like the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
But I read somewhere that pack everything and then remove half.
Yeah.
And that's all you need.
Yeah.
And one thing I will say is I literally pack one pair of shoes. Yeah. I always either probably like Converse trainers. And if I need like a pair of sandals.
Or flip-flops, yeah.
Or sandals like nicest for the evening. I don't pack high heels, I don't pack boots. I will hopefully just wear the one pair of shoes I'm going to wear for the whole time.
Especially if it's like a city break.
Yeah, yeah. I don't pack much shoes. And I also really don't pack much for the bottom half.
Yeah.
So one pair of jeans, two pairs of shorts maybe.
Yeah.
And then I've got a couple of dresses.
A midi skirt, two midi skirts maybe.
And that's it. And then I will just pack a few more tops to move it around.
Yeah.
But keep things pretty much slow and steady on that, on the top bit.
I think you can always think you need to pack so much and actually you're never going to wear half of the stuff that you pack.
No,
and it just
exactly.
becomes so annoying having to push around a really heavy suitcase. So something freeing about packing lightly now, I think.
Yeah.
Something I always pack, and I was saying to Laura, I don't know if this is wrong, is I usually have one adapter. And rather than having to find loads of different adapters and scout the hotel room for lots of plugs.
And fight over the plug.
I always take a multi-plug
socket
that I can plug in. I think it takes four. So I've got my charger, my phone charger, my camera.
That's going to blow up one day.
I don't know if so. I'm worried to say this. I don't know if it's bad to do that, but I always have. And I have for 15 years and everything's been fine. But I'll always pack a multi-plug adapter so that I can, don't have to worry about finding loads of different plugs.
And you reminded me that someone on Instagram messaged us saying their boyfriend always takes duct tape with them.
Yes, because, to cover the light.
Because whenever you get into a hotel room, there is always an annoying LED light from a television or...
Always.
Or like a fire light, which is probably quite important. And he takes it. I normally cover things with a sock.
Yeah, but it still shines through, I find. I think
a
bit of duct tape just over the TV, the glowing blue light at night would be...
Yeah.
Honestly, I would say that would be a travel essential.
Probably my last one is I always take a really small bag, like a bum bag or a fanny pack.
Or a little side, a crossbody.
A crossbody. A, because it's a lot safer.
Yeah.
But B, just going through airports, just having everything right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your phone, your passport, maybe like a lip balm and some money. That's all you need.
I hate the faff of going through security now. I will pack as minimal as I can in a day bag.
Yeah. And if you do pack your laptop, you know, just have it ready to get out straight away and then bung it back in again.
Like we use Victorinox's bags now, which is so good because they have a space for your laptop specifically.
At the front, yeah.
And also Monica, the travel hack, has an amazing suitcase.
The cabin bag.
Which has space for your handbag. See, we know when you fly of an airline where you have to only one bag, you can pop your little handbag in the top of the suitcase and take that in and out really easily rather than having to like throw open a whole suitcase.
Yeah. And lastly, fluffy socks. I always have freezing cold feet.
And on fluffy socks.
Always have freezing cold feet on flights or in a new hotel. And there's nothing nicer, actually, than arriving and just putting on some nice warm socks to pad about in. And also, like, say you're going, I don't know, you need to nip down to the spa or the pool. You've just got something for your feet.
Oh, I mean, fluffy socks, I would always have them for a flight.
Yeah.
They comfort me.
And in terms of packing, roll everything.
Yes.
It means it won't get creased. It also takes up a lot less room. And then put in your trainers, fill that with smaller reusable bags so that your jewellery's in, or your earrings, your watch. I sometimes roll up my phone charger and pop it in my trainers. Yeah. Like, just try and find space.
If you're taking a sun hat, always fill the middle of your sun hat with your underwear and your socks, because it keeps it round, and then it also, you can then have a nice little dip where you can pop the hat with all the things inside.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that probably was, well, hopefully useful.
Yeah, I think pack less in terms of clothes and actually just pack useful items, bits and bobs, blister and patches, items.
Yeah.
I think I often used to pack way too many clothes, but then end up with like those small, tiny essential items you kind of need when you get there.
You'd pack a million one shoes and none, all of them would kill you, and you wouldn't have anything to make it feel comfortable.
Cut back on shoes and really think about the useful little items.
Yeah.
And also, I always pack my Google Chromecast, so I can plug it in the back of a TV in any hotel, really, and cast Netflix and BBC iPlayer. And for someone who loves to have the telly on at night.
Yeah, Laura has to have the TV on at night. I don't even think about turning a TV on in a hotel room.
It just brings me comfort, especially if you can put your own programmes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there we go.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll try and summarise that in the podcast blog post.
Good luck.
Yeah. The second question, very different. Well, kind of still travel related. Mm-hmm. Who are the most amazing people that you've met on your trips, and why have they inspired you? So many people.
It's hard because we've kind of obviously met like in-country people, so guides or owners of various things, but then also on press trips we've actually met
friends
as well. So maybe we can split it into two.
Okay. Well, who are the most kind of inspiring non-friends that you've met then on a trip?
I think in Morocco, Rakaya.
Oh yeah, Rakaya. So do you want to explain who she was?
So when we were in Morocco, we took the tour out to a cookery school that was kind of in the countryside, Chef Tariq, and we were met by this female chef called Rakaya, and she'd studied English literature and wanted to be an English teacher, but then decided to follow her passion and basically become a chef.
Yes.
And then she kind of headed up this cookery school and had all these other women helping her who were employed from the local village. And she was like stunningly beautiful, but also she was just the kindest, most patient, like loveliest person ever.
And I love that she was so passionate about this women's only kind of cookery school.
Yeah, and she kind of knew that maybe her parents thought she'd go on and become an English teacher, and she'd done this university degree, but she was kind of like, actually, I'm just going to
do what
I'm going to go for the cookery. And she was starting to travel, she was going to come to London. And there was something about her in that she followed her passion, but also she wasn't one of those people who kind of always needs more. She kind of just loved where she was in the cookery school. And
that was everything now.
Yeah, and every day she went home to her little village with her mum and dad and then came back again and cooked again. And she had a serenity, I think, about her.
Yeah, a calmness.
And a appreciation and gratefulness for
what she had.
Yeah, her life, and her life was amazing and beautiful. Yeah. But she wasn't like, okay, and then I want to do this, and then I'm going to go here. And it was more like,
she told us anyway.
Yeah, she just seemed like grateful and kind of grateful for things, don't you? And show gratitude. And she was just like a calm soul. And I think that maybe if we could all like follow our passion, but also generally find like an interest in it, we'd all be much happier and less flighty and kind of, I'm going to do this.
I want to do more. I need more.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know, there was something about her that I found really calming.
Yeah, I think she was amazing. And the women on the trip in general that we met were just amazing.
And then a few years ago, I went on a yoga retreat.
And
I went to Silver Island Yoga, which is basically a private-owned island just off the coast of Greece.
How long ago was that?
Oh my gosh, 2015. 4 years ago.
4 years ago, yeah.
Blech. Oh, I'm old. What I loved is it was run by this couple, a South African couple called Lisa and Corne. And she had inherited the island from her family. It was a Greek family. And they'd moved there. I think she was in banking in London, or they both worked these big city lives. And then just moved to this island and set up this yoga retreat that's entirely eco-friendly, self-sustained. They didn't have electricity.
You've written a blog post on this, haven't you? Yeah.
They grew all their own food. And what they've achieved there is amazing. And they worked so hard. Like, I'd wake up and she was already dealing with the chickens, or he was building something else, so they were trying to sort out their water. And then the food that they cooked was all vegan, but absolutely incredible. And they obviously worked so, so, so hard.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they'd created this life and they weren't scared to leave behind, you know, like the rat race and, you know, running hot water.
Yeah.
And they've just kind
they grafted.
This, yeah, and they are this amazing team that just worked together. And now I think Silver Island is one of the most popular or highly voted yoga retreats in Europe. And it does so, so well. But like out of season, they're still there in the winter. And yeah. They've got a cat now and a dog. I don't know, there was something about
them. It captured your imagination.
It was their work ethic, I think. And also their determination to kind of be like, should we just do this? Okay, oh my God, we're going to do
it. We're going to do it, yeah.
And then they did it and they've made it work. And it, for me, that's that whole kind of manifestation of like believing in something.
And working really hard.
And making it happen.
Perseverance.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay, I'm just trying to think about other people. It's so hard because, I mean, particularly how we travel now on press trips, you meet so many people very fleetingly, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I would love to, like, I keep banging on about this Netflix series, Street Food, which is based stories around people who've worked insanely hard to create these most delicious, popular, but it's still very small stalls.
Well, no, in the first episode, didn't she get a Michelin star?
Yeah, she was quite rare. She got a Michelin star. But watching those stories, I thought, do you know what? I'd love to travel slower like that and have more time meeting people and hearing their stories, because that's what makes me happy most.
Yeah.
Is hearing about people. I'm like, I would make friends of a lamppost. So to be able to do something like that would be amazing. So,
but in the Arctic?
Oh, God, yeah. There was a man called Eric in the Arctic. Laura Hyatt, I don't know if you listen to this, but you'll resonate with this. Or anyone who I was in the Arctic with. There was a man called Eric and he was from Sweden and he had a huge grey beard and lived crazy remote, like in the Swedish Arctic in the middle of nowhere, could make fire, he seemed to be able to make fire just but with like clicking his fingers. He was just so practical. He didn't need I found out he had a mobile phone and he had a computer and a TV in his house, and I was very sad because I liked to think that he didn't have anything. But he was just so practical and so at one with nature, not afraid of the cold, not afraid of anything. And he was probably more content than most people that I've met.
Yeah.
Because he was in the middle of the most beautiful landscape you could imagine. And he was just a maker.
Yeah.
And I loved him. I could have spent weeks with him.
Yeah. And I think
fetching water with him, making fire.
And like maybe his American comparable was Rick in Anna Maria Island.
Oh, yes, Rick, who had to take us.
He took us on an eco tour.
Yeah.
And he'd grown up on Anna Maria Island. But what I loved about him is that kind of whilst everyone else was kind of busy doing work, what he did is kind of take out the tools, but he'd also then go out on his own to see, like, count the number of birds there were.
Yeah, he took it upon himself to sort of
check in on the wildlife. And he would save animals and kind of make sure the manatee were okay and always make sure that kind of the levels of the water looked all right. And he wasn't paid to do it, but he just loved where he lived so much and he just took it upon himself to just protect them. And he was so passionate about the area that he lived. And again, it's this kind of, I guess, like envy people who
are content with their lot.
Are content with their lot, yeah. And he, you know, I mean, the island is paradise. So yeah. I think I would definitely be content if I lived there.
But that's easy to say that because the grass is always greener. I think it takes a different type of person to, I'm desperately trying to be like this more, is just to love where they live and completely absorb themselves in that community.
Yeah, yeah.
And not feel that they need to get more and more.
But then again, though, if I did live in a beachside community that was warm and had manatee,
you don't know how you'd say it.
It's 100% different, Claire, to living in rainy Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
But you could say that we should be content with the fact that we get to do travel. And, But we're not content.
What I just liked about Rick, though, is just his kind of, like, peacefulness. So I guess, I really liked his kind of free-spiritedness, and he just did, what he was passionate about. So maybe what all these people have done,
It's
found their passion and really lived it and kind of not settled, even though it means maybe compromising in some respects, you know, not having running water or having electricity, but they're ultimately happier in the end.
Yeah, so because it's just people who've carved out their own happiness, really.
In their own little world,
yeah. And I guess on the other side, like you mentioned, we do meet people on trips who are people who are with us on a press trip, who then become our friend, and they're equally inspiring, I guess, because you are meeting people still that you wouldn't normally meet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, in Hamburg, we got to meet James, Ralph Dyer, and he Like, I owe it to him because we were on this barge boat in the middle of Hamburg and it was pouring with rain.
I think he felt quite sick.
Felt sick. We went down and he taught me how to shoot on manual. And since then, I always have shot on manual. And
so little
he's amazing. And his story is amazing in that he was working for Beautiful Destinations by the time he was 18.
Yeah.
And incredibly talented. And, like, I always think about that trip, but I mainly think about James because he did make that trip. He was just brilliant, wasn't he?
It's just definitely people that you just didn't expect to meet. You wouldn't cross paths with normally, I guess.
Yeah.
And we get to meet people from all over the world who do what we do, but live, you know, in different continents and different countries.
So also in The Hague, when we had the kind of Chinese influencers there.
Oh, that was so funny.
Which was like I don't know, it was just a different world.
A glimpse into a completely different society.
Yeah, and they had millions and millions of followers. And they were so quiet and so polite and so lovely. But inside their phones was this whole insane
like a universe of people.
Yeah. What do they use again in China?
Weibo.
Yeah. And there was a guy called Roy, wasn't there? He was the
only English speaker.
Yeah. And so he translated for all of them. But he was a lad, Roy.
He was funny, wasn't he?
He was great. Yeah. So there's been loads. And then with The Hague, we got to meet Tara.
Yeah. Tara Povey.
Tara Povey met Abby.
Yes.
From inside the travel lab. So again, it's kind of like lovely being with people. I find, like, we don't mind travelling together, but when there's new people involved as well,
that's the best thing about travel, I would say. It's the destinations are amazing, but usually it's the people and the hilarious stories that you end up with together from travelling together.
And then you think, oh, I know someone in that country, or I know someone in that city. And again, the world's like a friendlier place, isn't it? It feels smaller and more intimate.
When we were growing up, our brother had always, well, basically left England at 21, came back at 40, and he would always refer to, oh, so-and-so in this country and so-and-so in that country. I thought, oh my God, he's so, just so well-travelled. And now slowly we've built up this little community without even trying, of people from dotted all over.
Yeah.
And it's just a lovely feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a lovely feeling.
Okay, third question. What are your dream destinations that you haven't been to yet?
South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to go to in Taipei.
Yeah, South Korea and Taipei are really high on our lists at the moment.
Yeah, and I think Ellie Quinn recently went to Taipei and Taiwan. Did she go to more Taiwan or was it just Taipei?
I can't remember.
And that kind of, our brother had been there also, but it kind of ignited my spark to get there.
Yeah.
And South Korea, I just really want to go to Seoul. I want to experience the food and also, you know, it's this incredibly safe and clean city.
Yeah.
And just to experience Korean culture, I would absolutely die to go there.
Yeah.
And Patagonia, another one.
So we've never been to South America.
No, Patagonia, I just want to see that huge expanse of landscape and the amazing mountains in the background and everything. So that's probably my three. But then it's so hard, isn't it?
For me, I'd say it's like anything. It's my passion. So for me, it'd be Costa Rica for wildlife.
Yeah.
I'd actually just die, go to heaven in Costa Rica. Really, I'm hoping to go this summer to Nashville because both me and my husband love country music. So it's my dream to go there and see the country music. So it's sort of based around things that I love, I think.
Yeah. And I think mine is mostly driven by food.
Yeah.
So Mike and I were talking about holidays to take this year. And, like, he'd say a place, but if it's not a massive foodie place, I'm put off.
Yeah.
I think, and Korean food I love, so I could easily go there. Yeah. Taiwanese food, intrigued to try it at least. So, like, places where food is, like, and I think it's from that Netflix.
Street food.
Because it was all set in Southeast Asia, wasn't it? Asia more generally, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's it. I think I actually travelled to eat, and I think maybe cuisine is probably, for me, what makes travel, I think. So maybe I could. We've done Tokyo before, but maybe we were too young to really appreciate it.
I think we were
it.
17.
Yeah.
Probably absolutely, like, dazzled. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah. But I'd love to just go somewhere that's not, like, there's lots of, you know, bucket list places people talk about that are always quite similar. So New Zealand or Fiji or those kind of places. But I think a city like Seoul, probably that is Taipei and Seoul.
Costa Rica and Tennessee.
Oh.
And my dream ones
here
at the moment.
Here we are in Milton Keynes.
In the rain.
Sitting on the floor.
So there we are, dream destinations.
Okay.
Have there ever been places that you've been that you didn't enjoy?
Oh, interesting. I really am not a fan of Paris.
Yeah, Paris, I mean, this might be a very common thing. I don't know.
No, it's a very common thing. Paris, I often feel like there's a very small quarter or section of Paris that is undeniably beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But generally the feel I get there, I don't feel enthralled or curious. I don't feel kind of welcomed or excited. I find it just, I guess, anonymous in a way and a bit kind of, it's very handsome, but it's not very...
Yeah, Laura and I aren't actually a fan of big, handsome, huge cities. We prefer the quirkier, the smaller.
Yeah. So, like, cities. I would always take Rotterdam over Amsterdam, for example.
Oh, no, I love that. I love Amsterdam.
I don't know, again, like, it's nice. But for me, it kind of lacked something. And I think Rotterdam had that, like, really? A quirkiness. Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anywhere that I've been that I generally didn't like, I didn't enjoy, but...
Paris, I've never really had a great time there. It's been always okay. Yeah. And likewise, Amsterdam, like, fair enough, quite nice.
Although, I mean, the only place I've been that I really didn't enjoy was Koh Samui. I think it was Koh Samui. Basically, it felt like I could have been somewhere in Europe. It was, yes, we were in Thailand, but it was, I was surrounded by fellow Brits and the bars and the things. I was quite disappointed in Koh Samui.
Yeah.
And then quickly moved on to some of the smaller islands in Thailand. So I can, you know, things like that I might not, but I've never been to a place where I despise it.
One place that you told me I would love and I was, came home like, meh.
Where?
Was Barcelona.
Oh, I love Barcelona.
I think there was rioting when I went about the level of tourism. Yeah. And actually, I sympathise with them because the tourism was insane there to the point where I couldn't really enjoy much. And I felt like kind of the soul of Barcelona had just been sucked out by these huge, great crowds. I think
you visited at an unfortunate time. And had you visited at a normal time, without the crowds, you would have enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah, there was something about it. Like, I was there, but I couldn't feel that sense that everyone talks about of Barcelona, like this music and this warmth. Yeah, but I just did not enjoy my time in Barcelona.
Oh.
And it's, maybe I think, and Rome, the same.
Rome, I think we visited, every time we visited Rome, it's been like 42 degrees or something
and
crazy.
And the crowds again. So maybe, I think maybe it's best to visit these cities in autumn or even
out
winter.
Out of tourist season, yeah.
Someone once told me that Rome is amazing in winter.
I can imagine that.
Yeah, and I think when I go, perhaps the crowds suck almost the soul out of the place. And I just can't... Yeah, like, they're okay, but I guess I felt let down by those cities, Paris, Barcelona and Rome.
God, do you need to try harder cities?
But then, you know, places like Stockholm and Bergen and Norway.
You love.
I adore, and I think they're amazing. And I probably would rather go to Stockholm and Bergen over Paris and Rome, probably.
Fair enough. What are your tips for finding a good travel companion?
Interesting. So I would really struggle with a travel companion who is like, I've set an itinerary. Okay, we're up at this time and then we're going here and then we're doing this and then we're going to go here and then we're going to go there. And then if it doesn't go to plan, they then get very stressed.
Yeah.
So I always think if you can find someone who is quite
laid back. Unless that's the type of person you are too, because basically you're saying that's your idea of an awful travel companion because you don't like doing that.
And maybe you know how they say yin and yang in relationships, you should balance each other out. I don't know if that is true with a travel companion. I think in a travel companion you want yourself.
Well, I was firstly going to say, start kind of more broad, never travel with someone that you don't know very well.
Yeah, it's happened with me.
It's happened with Laura. Don't do that.
It ends in tears because travel has with it comes, well, what comes with travel is a range of stresses. So, you know, money often, where to eat, what time to go to bed. If you're out in a bar and you meet a crowd of people you want to stay with, the other person doesn't want to go. If one person wants to go to see something, someone doesn't. And I guess on an everyday level, they're quite small stresses, aren't they?
Yeah.
But they build up and they build up. And when I did this with someone I didn't know, it just ended in disaster and a huge fallout. Yeah. So I think, not someone you think, oh no, I know them quite well, they seem really nice. You really have to have an endurance with them, like know that your relationship is durable.
I would say you need the person that you've traveled with, know that you've maybe fallen out with them a few times before.
Yeah.
So you're not afraid to fall out with them in a way.
Yeah. I think someone you can be brutally honest with and kind of have a relationship that's very honest and can take fallouts. The highs and lows,
I think. I think.
So not someone you've just met at work and you think this would be a great holiday. That, I've heard so many stories, this never works.
No.
It never works. So I think
a good friend, a family member. Yeah, that you've fallen out with, the relationship is durable.
And who kind of has a similar sense of travel to you.
Oh, kind of.
You don't want to be the really laid back one with someone who's very kind of...
Or you're
militant.
From a city break and they're wishing they were an all-inclusive by a pool. You need someone on your level as well.
Yeah, because although travel is amazing, it's also quite unique. And it can be, if you're just two people together, it can kind of be a bit of a pressure boiler. Pressure cooker. Yeah, for a relationship, can't it?
But I also would say, don't, you know, expect, you know, stress and tension when you travel with someone doesn't mean that you've picked the wrong travel companion.
No, no. If anything, you've picked the right one because you can be honest with
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to be on your toes all of the time. So feel like you should be able to express how you feel.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to travel better.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think find someone that you can trust completely. Yeah.
Yeah. Fallen out with a few times and you've gotten over it together.
Yeah.
So this is sort of back to sort of like a blogger question more. When is the right time to approach tourist boards?
So we were so shameless, weren't we?
There's never a wrong time.
We did it from the very start when we were laughable.
I think we were lucky. I think we were a year old, maybe less.
Probably less. And people probably looked at, and I know they probably did. They probably looked at our stuff and laughed and were
and
like,
deleted the email.
No. But I think that's fine. And if you're willing to either, if you're willing to get no's and people declining you or just not hearing back, yeah, and you feel okay about
and you've
that,
got thick skin,
then you can start whenever you like. What I would say though, if you do realistically want to get somewhere,
give it a little while,
at least be blogging for a year probably, I'd say. Yeah. Because I think one perhaps stigma that has arrived in the travel industry is the number of people perhaps starting travel blogs purely to get luxury holidays,
yeah,
to get upgrades, to get great hotels.
Yeah, so prove yourself not to be one of those people,
yeah,
first.
So I think show that it's an actual genuine passion. You've been blogging purely from an interest in travel and a passion for travel,
yeah,
for, you know, a year. I think people who've just gone, well, I've been running it for 6 months and I really want to come to your hotel.
Send me to the Maldives for an all-inclusive holiday. That's, yeah, not going to work out for you.
And then also I think if you've run it for a year, you've got an idea of your audience.
Yeah.
You've got an idea of the posts that do well. And then you've carved out a better angle for yourself.
Definitely.
Because I think if you are approaching boards, you can't just say, I want to come to Cambodia.
Yeah.
Why do you want to go? Why do you think you'd suit it? What angle can you give them? How is it unique? What story are you going to tell? And I think you can't really do that perhaps when your blog is little.
So new, yeah.
Yeah. So I think give yourself time to also know what your blog is about. And then be brave in putting forward a unique perspective on something. You know, what makes your voice or your audience different
to all the others who are,
exactly,
who are also pitching?
Yeah, so, I mean, don't feel you have to wait years, though. And I don't think,
no,
you have to think, oh, I've got to have, you know, 100,000 followers
before anyone will take
that
me seriously. That's not,
no,
true at all. And I think, like we said before, blogging isn't a, it's a, it's a long game.
It
it's
is,
a really,
yeah,
long game. It's not a quick and instant thing. You're not going to be working. I mean, there are people who explode overnight, but the majority of people are, you know,
slugging away
for years before they really make anything. So don't expect it to be a fast process, but also don't underestimate yourself. So yeah, I think a year is probably,
yeah,
about fair.
And what we did is that initially, because there was, you know, we weren't big in any way, we still aren't, but what we did is we began by booking our own trips, like to St. Petersburg,
yeah,
but then trying to get maybe a hotel two nights,
yeah,
stay free or something like that, or 10% off, and then building it that way so that at least we were still traveling so we could get content,
mm-hmm,
but there was some pressure eased in that, you know, the hotel was covered
and we could then write about it, and we had,
yeah,
an example of someone we've worked with,
yeah, because that's it. You also need to build a portfolio, so perhaps, you know, begin by booking your own trip, but then there's small bits that you might get a city card for free, for example.
Yeah, which is really handy. Yeah.
Yeah, or a meal somewhere. And maybe start to piece it together like that. And then eventually after a year, if you do go for a big tourism board, you've kind of got more examples of collaborations.
Yeah, but certainly don't think you need to have hundreds of thousands of followers for people to be interested.
No, micro-influencers now are probably,
yeah,
of more interest.
As long as
macro,
you can prove you've got an engaged audience who have the demographic or the interests that brand or tourism board want, then you should feel confident in approaching,
yeah,
them,
and that your intentions are genuine as well.
Yeah,
you know, you really do want to write about travel and that your work is of quality.
So the next question is very blogging related. How do you organically combine topics that aren't around travel into a travel blog?
I think we have never had a problem with this because I've never given it a second thought.
No, I haven't either.
So if I'm not traveling and I'm not going to be writing about travel, I don't then sort of worry, oh god, well, I don't want to what to write now, or can I write this? I just write about what interests me, and I think
just gonna shift my bum.
One good thing perhaps we kind of harp on about this is authenticity. So if online you are yourself, though you might be still traveling, but in and amongst that, people still get an idea of what you like, what you don't like,
yeah,
things that are going on, stresses, great things,
yeah, your day-to-day life more generally.
Yeah, so if you are traveling but you're not just creating this gloss of a life of luxury travel or,
yeah,
this perfect world, if you are just being you, then your audience will also be more than happy to receive
blogs that aren't related to travel.
Yeah, content that aren't related to,
yeah,
travel. So from our perspective, I've never thought, like when I did the period pants one, So I'd just written one about, I don't know, I think it was like Florida.
Yeah.
And then I was writing about having my period in a pair of big pants. That's why, like, most read, one of our most read blogs.
I think that's very true, actually. We should say that. Our most read blogs are often not our travel blogs.
Never. Like, I think one's about breakup does well. One's about anxiety. And period pants.
And working together as siblings.
Yeah. And I think people are bored of the gloss and the, like, actually, I find, you know, some travel blogs so interesting and really helpful if I'm going somewhere or they inspire me to travel there. But as a human being, I like to know the nitty gritty and the behind the scenes stuff. And so I think if you are presenting yourself online in an authentic way, then you should feel liberated to also write about personal matters, or, you know, it might be about sustainability, like Claire wants to write about. That will still be of interest because ultimately your audience are interested in you as a person.
Yeah. Honestly, I've never given it a second thought about, can I write about this? It's your blog. People will know you for, hopefully, you and your personality. So don't be afraid to write about what interests you.
Yeah.
You may be surprised.
And I think if you do write one that doesn't go down well, a personal one, it will give you an indication of whether your blog is kind of being portrayed as like a travel portfolio or a catalogue, or it's being portrayed as you as a blogger, and these are your travels, and then you can kind of begin to personalise it how you want, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the next question is basically, what do you write about when you're not travelling? Well, whatever we feel like writing about.
Honestly, whatever I feel about. Sometimes we try and have a little sit down and think what might be useful.
Yeah.
So photography tips, tips on being a travel blogger, hints and tips for
SEO and SEO like that.
Or running a podcast. So I think maybe once a month we'll try and do like a useful one.
Yes, you will. Like a tip.
That's kind of a hints and tips one, that's kind of useful. But generally, we'll then just write about, I think, things that I feel passionate about. And I think all you have to think is, okay, what am I passionate about outside of travel?
Yeah.
Whether that be a personal subject about your own life or, you know, something completely different, you know, like products or that you're using.
The other thing that we've learned recently is we used to do, say we went to Sweden, we'd just do one blog post on Sweden, one mammoth blog post on Sweden. And actually what we've realised now is you can break those down into much smaller ones. So you could have gone to Sweden 8 months ago, but actually you never talked about the restaurants to visit. Think about places that you have been and whether you could pull together a blog post, or have you covered a lot of one place? So we have...
like a bumper.
Yeah, so we've done Florida. We visited Florida a number of times. So in the summer, when we were having a month off, we then did a bumper guide to Florida, including all the different places we'd been. And actually, that's more read than the single Florida post.
Yeah.
So you could think about bumper blog posts and that are just helpful in putting together one destination.
Or a region. So for example, we then do like road trip itineraries or Europe itineraries or unusual weekend breaks, and pull all the work we've done throughout the year together into one more, a blog that gives more of an overview.
Yeah, and might be Googled a lot as well. You know, how many people might Google Florida holiday ideas or UK road trip?
But I must say that, for example, I love Monica of the Travel Hack, and even if she writes about, I don't know, buying a caravan, and I'm not going to buy a caravan anytime soon. I'll read it because
I read her birth stories.
Yeah, because I really like Monica. So I think, again, it's about your relationship with your audience, and if it's right and they're engaged with you, then you really shouldn't worry so much and don't feel like, oh, it's this to-do list of, I need to find one, what have other people written about? Just write about what you want to write about.
Generally, they will be more interesting anyway.
Yeah, because they'll be genuine, I think.
Yeah. How do you organise your photos? Do you have separate folders for edited and unedited photos?
We've weirdly been organised with this since day dot.
Yeah, when I read this last night, I was thinking, how have we always done this?
I don't know. So when we started our blog in 2014, the first thing we did was get a Dropbox.
Yeah.
Account
which and we have to pay for monthly now because there's so many photos in
so all of our photos are in there and they're all in their own folder for a different destination,
and that's then an app on our phone so we can download any of those pictures anytime we want.
So they live there all the time, and what we tend to do is we get home, I'll edit the photographs in Lightroom and export them and put them in the Dropbox. So in the Dropbox and their folders are only our edited photos. So they are ready to go for blog posts, they're ready to go for Instagram.
They're like a support for the Dropbox, it's like a portfolio of all the destinations.
They're always ready to go should we need the photos, and they're all organised like that. And then on my computer and on my Lightroom, I keep the unedited photos for 6 months.
Yeah.
And if I've not gone back to them and I've not used them, I delete them.
It does give me a bit of anxiety. I feel like we should have a hard drive.
Possibly, but also I think with photography you can get bogged down in having 300 photographs of one meal. you're not going to use.
Yeah, and you've selected those ones, or you selected the ones that you want.
Exactly. So I'll put them on Lightroom, I'll edit, and then I'll make a conscious choice about what goes into the Dropbox for social media and for the blog.
Yeah.
And it just keeps things neat and tidy, easy for us to go back and forth. But I don't really try and keep unedited photos.
Yeah. I'd be interested to find out what other bloggers do. I mean, we've always used Dropbox, but
yeah.
I don't know what other people use at all.
I think we use Dropbox because there's two of us. And so if you wanted to access a photo, and I don't always have them on my computer.
Yeah, most people might just leave them on their laptops, might they?
Yeah. I don't know, there's something about having them up in the cloud. But then again, you know, if the cloud went...
Don't even...
So maybe a hard drive is recommended then. But I think have a go-to place where they're organised by name and the edited photos are there, ready and waiting, because you never know when you want to tweet about a place. No,
exactly.
Or do something.
It's so handy having them on your phone.
Yeah,
so handy.
And you don't have to keep re-editing them as well by that point.
Yeah, so it's quite a straightforward question, really.
Yeah, and I'll always, by the way, I'll edit in RAW. So I shoot in RAW, which means it's not been compressed or it's not been altered in any way. And then I'll edit it in RAW and then I'll export it as a JPEG.
Okay. How do you get over a row with a partner when you're travelling?
Well, we've got good experience of this.
I mean, all the time. It might be a bit different for us because we've rowed every day of our lives since we were born. Yeah. So that's 32 years worth of experience. But for us, we will row and then just move on.
No, I think first of all, accept that you will row, and also accept that a row doesn't have to mean you're going to have an awful time or it's the end of your travels.
No, not at all.
I think
it could be that you're very tired, hungry.
Exactly. Like we said, travel has its own unique kind of stressful environment, and you owe it to yourself to think, okay, we've rowed and it's a bit crap, but it's normal and it's to be expected. Yeah. So first of all, don't worry about
it. Don't panic that you're rowing.
If the row is something about one person wants to go here and one person wants to go there, then you're going to have to compromise.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to have to say to each other, we can't keep saying, I want to do this and I want to do that. Yeah. You're going to have to sit down and say, right, what can we do to compromise?
Because remember, when we travel with our friends, often we'll say where we all want to go and then we'll work out a route where we can incorporate all those things, but we're not like dashing in a taxi to one end of the city and then another, which then causes more tension.
Or it might be that someone, you know, doesn't get to do what they want to do, they have to go and do something else. But I think you have to compromise and also have a really open conversation about, you know, one person might want to pay, you know, £30 a head for dinner and you might want to pay £15 a head.
Yeah, you have to be honest.
You have to be honest and compromise. And then I think thirdly though, if it isn't a rational argument, like you want to go to A and someone wants to go to B, if it's like Claire and I, like someone's just annoying.
Yes,
annoying
just one of those days and you're tired and you're annoying each other.
You're over it. I think take space out for 10, 15 minutes. One of you leaves the hotel room or you go... goes for a walk, goes and gets a cup of tea. But the moment you are back together, you pretend it never
happened. This might be a terrible piece of advice.
No, I think it's a great piece of advice.
Our piece of advice is literally... pretend it didn't happen, because really you don't need to grate over a stupid row about who lost a hotel key. You don't need to keep going on about that.
No.
So the best tactic really is just to pretend it never happened. Take time out for 15 minutes, come back together, move on.
Come back and go, right, should we go and get that dinner? Should we go and get that cup of tea? And then I think both parties are always so relieved it's done.
Yes.
You just continue. And yes, it's a bit cringe. It's a bit cringe that 15 minutes ago you were like
crying at each other,
crying, screaming, and then suddenly you're having a cup of tea together. But if you can both move through that cringe factor together, within 5 minutes you'll be fine.
I'd much rather handle it like that. Yeah,
yeah.
And you're done.
If it's a rational argument, compromise. If it's completely
irrational, stupid fight because you're tired, just pretend it didn't happen.
Either have a nap, have time apart, and then come back together.
I always find a nap makes you wake up a different person.
It's like it resets my brain.
Yeah, even if I feel a bit down, I have a nap, wake up full of beans.
Yeah,
like, oh, why was I sad before?
It's like the magical elixir of life.
Yeah, have a nap. Maybe that should be a piece of advice for anything in life. Have a nap. What made you want to start a podcast, and how did you go about it?
I don't know.
My bottom is so...
I think it was dead on this.
That's not your answer.
No,
be careful of the wires.
Why did we start a podcast?
We started a podcast because I think we felt like Instagram, although we have stories, you don't want to babble on stories for, you know, forever and a day. And we just wanted something where we didn't want to vlog, we didn't want to have to put, you know, our faces on YouTube, but we definitely wanted to be able to show our personalities more.
Yeah, I think the problem with social media, and I think everyone whinges about this, is it unfortunately lends itself to offering a really curated view on your life, and it's all very glossy, very selective. And I think we both I think our personalities are that we overshare massively.
Yeah.
It just didn't give me an opportunity to overshare.
I just wanted to overshare.
And I think I wanted to feel a bit more natural, a bit more normal, a bit more myself, and to kind of get more of an intimacy with people that follow us and our friends and stuff. And I felt like the podcast, because even vlogging, I think, is still, it's so aesthetic and it's so, oh, I look like, yeah, I've got double chin here, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I think even then it's kind of felt quite self-conscious. Perhaps we felt that the podcast was the most authentic way just to be yourself.
Because all
online.
You're doing is plonking ourselves, well, in our case, on a carpet, sticking two microphones in front of you, and then talking and saying whatever comes into your head. So there's no, you can't really hide behind a pretense in a podcast.
No, no.
If it's an hour long, just being very careful about what you say is actually very hard.
And also, so, I'll say, very, very boring. And I think a problem with some podcasts I found are people very obsessed with being like profound.
Yeah.
So people are like really want to say something really profound about feminism or voyeurism and this kind of stuff. And it's all very, even then it still feels quite curated and contrived. I like podcasts where it is just, and you think, you come away thinking, oh, I know that person better. Well, they're really nice. Or,
well, I think the best bit of feedback we've ever had on our podcast is when our friends say it literally feels like we're just hanging out with you in a room.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we wanted. We just wanted it to be normal, down to earth, edited as very little as possible other than taking out a few ums, and just being able to be ourselves, which I think we can struggle with on other platforms.
Yeah, so I think ultimately we wanted to feel more connected with an online audience and to be more of ourselves, and we were kind of sick of the pretense that Instagram forces on you,
I
think,
into.
So really that's it. I think, I don't think we ever had any ambitions that this will be like a top 10 podcast. It's not going to rank anywhere.
No.
It is just a chance to get things off our chest, to have a laugh together, and to hopefully kind of feel closer to people, I think. Yeah.
And how did we get started? Well, I just Googled how to start a podcast, bought two microphones, and that was it.
It's really easy. We've got Audio Boom.
Yep. Our podcast is hosted on Audio Boom, which is, I think, £15 a month at the moment. Bought two microphones, Yeti microphones.
Yeah, so Yeti microphones. There's a Pro and there's a normal one. We just got the normal one.
Yeah.
They're about £100 each, aren't they?
Yeah. We've got two sets of headphones so we can hear ourselves back. And then we use GarageBand to record it and Audacity, which is a free software, to edit it. So it's actually a very...
It's so straightforward.
It's so straightforward. And I know you have to pay for the microphones. Once you've bought them, it's really costing you next to nothing to create this content.
And once you've uploaded to Audioboom, it syndicates across Spotify, iTunes,
Deezer. And that's it, yeah.
Yeah. So again, that job's done for you. You don't even have to, you know, worry about uploading to different platforms.
Yeah,
it's done.
I've actually felt like recently we don't need to promote it so much because we know people are subscribed on iTunes. iTunes does the job for us and alerts people for when we've got a new podcast.
And Android, because I've got an Android phone.
Yeah.
The Android notification as well. So I would say podcasting in terms of content creation is 100% less stressful than writing a blog post. Less work than doing an Instagram caption or picture. It's
more cathartic.
It's just bright and breezy and easy. And I think
bright and breezy and easy.
That was my Tinder description.
So yes, I mean, that's a rambling reply, but we started it because we wanted to find somewhere to be more of ourselves, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you have a bucket list? I mean, we've kind of touched upon this.
Yeah.
I don't have a bucket list that I obsessively check. I'm not obsessively trying to tick through 52 countries or anything like that. I don't care how many countries I've visited. I will go back to the same place over and over again because I love it. So in that sense, I don't have a bucket list. I just go where I feel like I want to be. Like, I'll go to Tuscany if I want to just relax and eat food. I'll go. Yeah. So there's places that I will go to over and over. So in that sense, no, I don't really have a bucket list.
I think an irony with a bucket list, and maybe it's just myself, is if I have a bucket list, I then seem to actively avoid those destinations. It's kind of like travel procrastination. So, you know, if I made a list of stuff I need to do in the house, I inevitably will find something else to do. If I make a list of destinations, I'll inevitably go to another one.
Yes.
So actually, I don't know why, I think it's the pressure.
The pressure to tick them off the list.
The pressure to tick them off, to go, to have that bucket list experience there. That actually, I think, ironically, doesn't work in its favour. I end up going elsewhere. And the places that I go to instead turn out to be the great spots.
Yes. It's almost like the last minute things that you book always the best.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, when you're planning a night out and it has to be the best night out possible.
Yeah.
And it's always the worst. And then you go a spontaneous night out and it's the best.
Yeah.
That is the that sums up a bucket list, I think.
I think so. And I think bucket lists are overrated in that they set, like, for example, if Paris is on your bucket list and you get there, you feel devastated if you don't have a good time.
It's always been on my bucket list and I hated it.
Exactly. So I think, I don't know if I agree with bucket lists. I don't have one of my own.
No, I don't.
And also, as an indecisive person, where I want to go is constantly changing as well.
Yes. And it really depends on your stage of life and what mood you're in and everything.
Sometimes my bucket list is just to go down to Cornwall.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go very far.
Yeah, no, we don't have a bucket list. I think it puts too much pressure on you to...
And travel.
...whiz through life really fast.
Ticking things
off.
Yeah,
just go where you feel like it. Book last minute things and let that... Yeah, let the excitement from the spontaneity come through rather than going through a list.
It's like people who go, and then I'm going to get engaged, and then I'm going to get married, and then I'm going to have a kid.
And then I'll buy a house, and then I'll buy a bigger house, and then I'll die.
Yeah. Mm. It's very similar, perhaps.
Perhaps. So no, we don't have a bucket list. Do you reckon you guys would do a budget travel weekend away to inspire mortgage owners? Well, we both have mortgages.
Yeah.
And we often, well, always, I think we're proud of the fact that we always do small breaks away from our houses.
I think
we do them more frequently than we jump in on a plane.
I love a UK break and I will always just book an Airbnb, normally like the southwest, like Somerset Way, Dorset.
Yeah.
And then I'll go straight down there. So I'm all for a cheap UK break. In fact, I often favour them over like the long haul flights.
We always say you do not need a 2 week holiday in the Maldives to feel refreshed from life.
No.
When I go away with James, even if it's one night or two nights, just in a different place, a nice dinner, you feel a completely different person.
You do,
So, we completely endorse budget breaks away and we try and do them as much as possible and write about them. Jersey, Laura just did.
Yeah. If you go actually onto our blog and go into the UK section, you'll find a ton of our UK breaks.
Yeah.
Because I have done, especially with Mike. Mike isn't a big traveller because he misses the cat.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, what do you think Tibby's doing now?
Yeah.
So we do have a lot of UK breaks. So there's tons and tons there. And I normally try and get an Airbnb or a cheapish hotel and just drive there.
Yeah.
And I always think if you can have one good meal, like a great dinner, like lots of lovely food, lots of wine.
Yeah.
One thing to see and one great walk. You're done.
And a lovely bed.
That's all literally all you need.
Yeah.
And it can be half an hour down the road. I mean, Mike and I, for my birthday, went about 40 minutes away.
Yeah.
For three nights. I loved it.
I'll always go to Oxford. It's 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
We are so for budget breaks because, like you guys, when we're not working, when we're paying for things, we don't have much money. So we want to do budget breaks.
The mortgage is sucking me dry.
Yeah, mortgages that don't, however much you seem to pay off a year, doesn't seem to do anything.
It's like, Laura, you've owned this place for 5 years and you've paid off £5.
£5.
Yay.
The last question.
Wow.
The most profound question of all. Are you ready for it?
Oui, oui.
Would you rather be a Moomin or a Smurf?
Moomin.
Moomin. We went to Helsinki last year and went to the Moomin Cafe.
Yeah.
We love Moomins. We grew up with them. I watched the Moomins
way
more.
They are bleak, though.
They are bleak, but I watched the Moomins way more than I watched the Smurfs.
I used to put Smurfs on. Now, here's a weird memory. It was on at 7:15 every morning on BBC Two.
Yeah.
And I used to always put it on whilst I dried my hair with this metallic blue
hairdryer.
And at the time, I had a bob.
Yeah.
And I used to always watch the Smurfs, but I felt like they were a bit... The Moomins are kind of... They're deep. They think about stuff.
The Smurfs were too squeaky-voiced for me.
And everything was just like...
And weird songs.
The stuff they worried about was ridiculous. Whereas Moomin's, like, she wrote that in a time of war.
Yeah.
You know, when the Cold War and all this stuff was really, like, a real threat.
I bet who asked this wasn't expecting us to have this knowledge of a Moomin.
It was one of the Whittakers.
I know it was. I think it was Ali.
Yeah. But they, I mean, the Moomins actually are the product of, like, quite a dark time. And their little valley, like, gets threatened all the time to be kind of obliterated. As was their worry with Finland. So as an anxious warrior, I identify truly with a Moomin.
The end of the podcast.
Oh, I thought you might say more.
Oh, well, I didn't want...
You don't want to be like Papa Smurf.
Well, no, I didn't want to... It was very profound how you ended. I didn't want to then just ramble on again about it.
Okay.
But I agree, I love the Moomins way more than the Smurfs.
I don't like in the Moomins, that little lady.
Oh, little...
Mai.
Little Mai. She was on my coffee in the cafe and I was like, no.
Yeah, you should explain that a bit.
What do you mean she was in my coffee?
You were in a Moomin cafe.
I was in a Moomin cafe and on the top of my coffee was a stencil of her face.
Yeah, it was. She was weird, and she had funny sticky hair.
She scares me.
Yeah, I wouldn't be it or my, but I'd happily be any of the Moomins.
Yes, me too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Smurfs are silly, and they worry about the silly things in life. I'd rather be more profound, like a Moomin.
Although sometimes a better Smurf's happier than a Moomin.
Don't know. They don't get to wear any tops. They just wear funny old pants
and hats.
Annoying hats.
Little white hats.
Cool.
Right. So that draws to an end season two.
A shambolic season.
Of Twin Perspectives podcast series. Like we said at the beginning, we're off on we're off on a few trips in the next couple of weeks. So when season three does begin, I imagine there will be reflections on Portugal and Abu Dhabi.
And we can say whether we fell out, which we will, and how those makeup tactics went.
Makeup tactics? Makeup.
Reconciliation tactics. Yeah.
Okay, we'll report back on those.
We absolutely don't hug, though, and we would not kiss.
I would not, no.
We wouldn't touch each other if we were trying to.
I wouldn't touch each other for anything.
I haven't touched you weird. In years.
It sounds weird.
Laura. No, but I mean touched your arm, for example. I can't remember the last time I actually physically touched you.
Okay.
Can you, though?
No, I just.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this entire season. When did it even begin?
Too long ago, because we stopped for ages.
2 years ago.
Yeah. But season three, who knows? It could bring great things, or it could just be like this. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye. 1, 2, 3, 4.